Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Ebba Ossian-Nilsson in this episode. Ebba is a professor of innovation and open and online learning based in Sweden. Ebba's work in quality and open education resources is influential across the globe, and her continued and tireless work on behalf of professional associations in open, online and distance education makes her a true legend. I'm privileged to be talking to Ebba Ossian-Nilsson, who's an independent researcher and consultant, known internationally for her work on quality and as a contributing member to global professional groups, including the European Distance Education Network, EDEN, the International Council for Open and Distance Education, ICDE, and of course, the Swedish Association for Distance Education. Ebba, it's great to be talking with you. Can we start with a brief overview of your career and publications?
So I'm a professor in innovation in and open online learning, and I have been in this sector since 2000, so some 20 years. For a long time, I worked at Lund University, which is one of the largest universities in Scandinavia. But 5 years ago, I decided to be an independent consultant and researcher. So I work with a consultancy for many universities in my own country, but also international. Yes, you already said, Mark, that I am in the EC for ICDE and also for EDEN. I have also been in the EC for EUCAN, the European Network for Continuing Education. And I also work with EIDTU, which is the European Association for Distance Teaching Universities. And as you said, I'm the vice president for the Swedish Association for Distance Education. So nowadays I work mainly at national level and international level with policy issues. And of course, quality is one of my specialities and where I have done a lot of research. In ICDE, I'm also chairing now for the third year, the OER Advocacy Committee, where we aim to work together with UNESCO with their OER recommendations to be implemented. The recommendations were adopted in November 2019. So we are working globally to try to answer those areas, what the recommendations. It is about capacity building, it is about internationalization, it is about policies. In the OER Advocacy Committee, we have people from all over the world. So I'm chairing that committee for the third year now. I'm also with ICD for the Network for Focus Points on Quality. And I'm also working as a reviewer for ICD. I have done, for example, two reviews for University Tabukas in Indonesia. I'm also a quality reviewer for EIDTU. And I've done both reviews for universities, but also universities who are setting up MOOCs and their MOOCs courses. When it comes to my publications, my main areas is about quality, quality assurance, quality enhancement, about benchmarking. I did my PhD in 2012 about benchmarking e-learning in higher education, and that was very timely because after that I got a lot of offers doing a lot of quality work because it was just in time and just in the right place at that time. So after that, for example, I did a large research review for ICD about global quality models on open online learning. That publication was also very right in time in 2015, and it is cited quite often. And also after that, I got a lot of new offers because it became very well known. And also, I did with the co-editor for the EAD to use a manual for quality, the e-excellence framework. And that was in 2016. So after that also, I got a lot of offers for the quality work. And then I do a lot of work on OER and MOOCs and leadership, and also some work on open education and people with disabilities. My professional background is an occupational therapist, so that is quite close. And now I'm working with open education, so I still do some work with disability studies. I was the one who introduced MOOCs in my country, in Sweden, in 2014. We were quite late as, you know, the year of the MOOC was in 2012. I'm also doing a lot of work for the European Commission and also for the former Open Education Europe. So I'm also an ambassador and advocate for that. I've always been interested in innovation and new things which are not really clear how to deal with it. So I'm perfectly placed now where there are so much new things coming up with open education, not least since this terrible corona pandemic. I'm also working with ISO, and I have done some work with International Labour Organization for their quality work and their e-learning courses. My publications, I have some 200-plus publications, book chapters, articles, technical reports. I do a lot of blogging and a lot of publishing in social media. I'm also a reviewer for a lot of journals in the area.
Eva, you sound wonderfully busy. So it sounds like much of your work is around the OER and quality side of things.
Yes, I have been with the OER since it started in 2002, and I have done a lot of projects on national, but also on European, but also international level on OER. My main work now is about OER and quality, and of course also quality in open online learning.
Mm. Could you tell us a bit about the OER and quality work that you've done, some of the major findings, some of the reports and work you've, or some of the publications you've had?
Yes, I can start with my dissertation, benchmarking e-learning in higher education. At that time, I worked together with EADTU, which around that time launched their e-excellence framework. Institution who went through this quality review, they could get a label from EADTU as well. One of the studies I did for my PhD was to look at those institutions who had chosen to work with the e-excellence framework and their findings around that. And also the research I did with ICDE in 2014 and 15, we did a quite large research about quality models around the globe. We looked at some 40-plus different kind of quality models in open online learning, e-learning, flexible learning, OER, and MOOCs. It was me and Kit Williams, Antonio Camilleri, and Mark Brown. But I was the research leader. And the findings was, first we defined what is quality, and the whole spectrum from quality assurance to more like quality development and quality enhancement and guidelines. Because I very often get the question about quality, what is quality, and how can you assure quality? But there is a wide spectrum from quality assurance to quality enhancement and guidelines. Then there also, you look at quality at different levels. We also wrote about in this report. You have the nano level, the more personal level. You have the micro level. It's more like the course, the modules, the meso level, which often used to be related to institutions, and then the macro level, which is national or international, more like policy level. So then we also looked at all those 40-plus models, and we tried to map them, whether more like quality assurance, whether more like frameworks or guidelines. And then we also came up with some recommendations, both for ICDE to work further on, but also for institutions and regions or at national level who would like to focus on quality in the area of open online learning. And then also the manual where I was the co-editor for EADTU. It was an update of the e-excellence framework. And that framework, it has three, or you can say six, areas. It is about management, it is about the course, both the course, the curricula, the course design, and the course delivery, and then the support for students and staff. So we updated that, and now it is also included OER and the use of MOOC and social media and these kind of things. I did another interesting work with the European Commission, which is about promoting open online learning in the workforce in Europe. And that was published last year. That was also very much about how the workplaces have to work more with open online learning, because nowadays you can't send people to courses or education. You need to have just in time, just for me, learning at workplaces. So there we had possibilities to introduce a lot of my earlier work on open online learning and OER and innovative pedagogy.
So Eva, just drawing on your quality work, what are some of the things that universities tend not to do so well when it comes to quality? What's the general issue or issues that you tend to confront with universities?
First I would say, when you look at quality, you need to look at quality as an ecosystem. If you're doing bad, for example, for staff support, for example, or capacity building with your staff, then a lot of things will fail. That is one thing. You need to have an ecosystem. And the other thing is that what I see quite often is that we have a very rather old-fashioned quality monitoring in most countries. And that doesn't fit with the new paradigm of open online learning. Institutions are trying to measure open online learning and quality with an old system. So that is what I see very often. And that is also why I spend a lot of time with, for example, with the ADTU and with the ICD, working on quality frameworks. There is another good one from the European Commission, which is from the Joint Research Centre. It's about opening up education, a framework for higher education institutions. And they also see the ecosystem. There are 10 dimensions, and they are quite similar to those I mentioned before for the e-excellence framework. It is about leadership, it is about quality, it is about... there are four transversal ones which have an impact on the more core dimensions. And the core dimensions are, for example, about content, about recognition, about pedagogy. So it depends on what kind of leadership and strategies you have, how it will unfold for the content, for example, and the use of open education resources, because you need to change your pedagogy to working with open online learning. So that is also one thing which is quite often failing in institutions. But I see now in this crisis we are in the middle of, there is suddenly a lot of changes in perspectives and approaches in the favor for open online learning and quality and how you look at quality. And also I used to say that there is some kind of spin-off effects. I mean, the way the national agencies for higher education, how they monitor and evaluate universities, what they are asking for, universities are delivering. And what universities are asking for, the faculties are delivering. And what faculties are asking for, the institutions are delivering. What the partners are asking for, the teachers, the academics are delivering. And in the end of the scale, what teachers are asking for, students are responding to. So we need to change our way of monitoring and evaluating from the that is again about the ecosystem, and to have those levels which I talked about earlier on, the micro, meso, and micro perspective. They need to be aligned better. It is quite often, at least in the areas I'm working with and my colleagues, we are very often talking about there need to be a system shift, and because we have a new paradigm. I mean, the system we have today for universities are built in another time, some hundred years ago, several hundred years ago even. Now we are with the fourth industrial revolution. We also need to have the curriculum 4.0. But that's not the case so far.
Mm. So it sounds like your work is really fascinating. It goes from the level of national policy right through to what happens in the classroom. Which of those areas do you find yourself most attracted to as a researcher?
It is difficult in one way to say, but because, again, it is about an ecosystem, and it is also very much about the culture within the ecosystem. But I am very, very interested in policy and leadership issues, because I see more and more that this is very, very important. But, of course, with that, I don't mean that you should have this top-down perspective. That is absolutely not what I'm saying. But I see very often that you need to know the way forward, because then everything will more fit in place. So policy issues and strategies is very important. I also work, as I was saying, about personal learning quite a lot and used to write about that. But again, personal learning can just happen if you have a more open strategy and you have policies aiming for that.
Yeah, it must be a really important element of your work, the ability to think in terms of national strategy, but also in terms of the individual in the classroom. I mean, there's an incredible breadth there. But as you mentioned, if you're going to get online education right, you need to have that view of the entire ecosystem.
Otherwise, a lot of things will follow. There's a saying, at least in my language, if you don't do it right and look at the holistic perspective. And that was also really what I stressed already in my dissertation, to have this holistic perspective. I mean, otherwise, a lot of things would fall between the chairs, so to say.
So, Eber, as you pointed out, we're now in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, and you know, we're both based at home. It's normal for me to do interviews like this via Skype, but after the interview, we can't go out for a coffee in our own independent countries. But given that it's now early 2020, what are your observations about online learning and education at the present time? Mindful, of course, of what the COVID pandemic is meaning for educational shifts.
Today I attended a conference in my own country online. It was for the whole day about, it was from the school sector, because they had set up a wonderful initiative which is called School at Home. And there were pupils, there were the Minister of Education, and they were from different sector for the school, and it was a fantastic conference and showing a lot of innovative approaches. And also what I see very much, because I attend a lot of conferences and online meetings and around the world with my colleagues and networks, and we are very often both asking ourselves, but also, that is the question, what is really education about? That was also mentioned from our Minister of Education yesterday, for example. What is education about, and how shall we cope with that? And we are again coming back to the need to be maybe new kind of curricula.
So at the moment, there's a lot of countries, a lot of schools, a lot of universities moving online quite quickly. Do you have any concerns about that from a quality perspective?
Yes. I mean, it is different with this urgent remote distance education, when you just try to do the same as you have done always in the classroom and just put it online. Because online learning is not just about the content, to achieve the content. And especially nowadays when the content is almost free all over the places. And I see also from this crisis, a lot of publishers, a lot of companies have let everything for free, more or less. So that is one different issue. Urgent remote distance education is not the same as open online learning. And the other aspect of that is that the learners, they have other needs and requests when they are online. Because they can't just, you know, come and knock at the door, or they can't just come in and say hello, and as you were saying, come and have a coffee or whatever. So there are those quality criteria and dimensions which have been already defined, and we know a lot about quality dimensions in open online learning. They are even more important in this urgent situation. For example, transparency. For example, presence. For example, feedback, personalization, or personal learning. So that is even more important. And of course, it was not easy for the teachers to just over one night to do online remote teaching. And they did well. And but I have also seen now that people are networking and collaborating, and there's a lot of resources, and there's a lot of hubs, and there's a lot of webinars how you can do. So people are really, really keen to share their experiences and knowledge. And I think we have to keep this good culture of collaboration.
So, Eber, imagine I gave you an unlimited research budget. Where would you invest it? What's the research that you'd most like to see?
First of all, I don't think I have mentioned so far, but one of my concerns is really about the SDGs, the UNESCO Sustainable Development Goals.
Yes.
They should be achieved for 2030, and we are now in 2020, and I don't still see so much. A lot of things are happening, but still there are doubts if we can achieve the goals for 2030. If we don't move quicker. Yes. And not at least in the area of education, the SDG 4. Sometimes I think some countries and some institutions are really, really keen on working on the SDGs, but sometimes when I have presentations or webinars, for example, and I ask just randomly, you know about SDG4? Many people say they don't know or they don't care. So still we have a lot of work on that, and I think there will be have to be more research how we can achieve that and what kind of impact it will have for the people around the globe. Also with education for all, we have to rethink, most universities, for example, today I talk mainly about universities because I came from the university sector. They have their own university, their own faculty, their own students, their own everything. For example, when it comes to OER, developing and move forward in OER, that is the only way we can reach the SDG4, Education for All. But in many institutions, they don't care about OER because they would like to write their own books or they would like to produce their own material or instead of building from others. And we have to have more research on that. So that is one issue. And then another issue is about the new initiative from also from UNESCO about futures of education, learning to become. And that is aiming for 2050, quite a long time ahead, and it goes beyond the SDGs. And they all have also, in the name already, they say futures, because there's not just one future, there are many. So we need to prepare for that. And they really put the learner in the center here. Yeah. So by that, again, we need to change perspectives. That is also research I would like to see more. What is it about with self-regulated learning? And that we can see now also from this crisis, a lot of students and pupils, they take their own ways for their learning materials and for their learning pathways. I also would like to see more research about curricula 4.0 and, of course, also about the digital transformation as such. That goes back to the fourth industrial revolution again, because it changed the way we live, the way we perform, the way we communicate, the way we relate, the way we work, etc., but also the way we learn and even how we make relations and for example, in my own country, most relations nowadays, they meet on social media or those special sites where you can meet people. So it's an interesting development and shift. With that, I say, there are two ways. It's not just that we have to adapt to the digital transformation, but we can also you can also have an impact yourself on how it will be unfolded, and you can be proactive to work on that. So there are two ways. You not just to adapt, but you can also be proactive to see how it can develop. Yeah. And then, of course, I will see research on quality and with the new paradigm of how we perceive quality in open online learning related to what I have been talking about, the digital transformation, the SDGs, the futures of education, and all those kind of issues.
Sounds like a very ambitious research project.
It is. Someone have to do it.
Eva, you've used the term curriculum 4.0 a few times in this interview so far. Can you tell me what you mean by that?
It goes in parallel with the fourth industrial revolution, as I just mentioned, because the digital transformation changed our ways to, as I said, how we work, how we perform, how we communicate, how we relate, how we learn. So there need to be a new curricula as well, matching this. The curriculums today are very, that is also which we talked about earlier, that is a hindrance for quality sometimes because the curricula is so fixed. And we need to reach the goals in the curricula. But again, how the curricula is defined and described, then we have possibilities to more move for those the new paradigm. It's not just about the content and facts and figures. It's so much about also about what we used to call 21st century competences. And the competences like self-regulated learning, like problem-based learning, like collaboration, like values and attitudes. More kind of those social, cultural competences. Actually, it was also said yesterday by our minister for education that students and pupils who have the exam from 2020, they should be proud, and the labor market should really appreciate those students and learners, because if they have achieved their exams, they have really showed that they are self-regulated, that they are independent, that they can take responsibility. Again, all those kind of competences which we don't use to, we used to take them for granted, but we don't facilitate them, or we don't monitor it, or we don't, we just suppose that students should fix this themselves. And that is what very much about the curricula 4.0.
Well, Deborah, it sounds like you're incredibly busy doing some very important work that's very, very relevant to the challenges that the world faces in education and online education today. Who are two people you'd recommend as legends of online learning? One whose work or perspective is significantly influencing you now, and one who you think otherwise has an important perspective to share?
I am very influenced myself by Tony Bates, like many others, because he is really, first of all, he has a lot of experiences and a lot of knowledge and competences, and he is also very humble how he share his competences and professional knowledge. So I, of course, follow him, and I'm a very good colleague and friend with him as well. I think he was also one of the first one who really wrote a blog post, how to transform for this crisis. So he's very, do things very much right in time, right in place, and I'm really appreciated his work. Another person I would like to mention, and who I also appreciate very, very much and learn a lot from, is Ashka Kambar. Yes. She's the president for Commonwealth of Learning. She's a fantastic friend and colleague as well. I appreciate her very much, both, of course, for the work she's doing with Commonwealth of Learning. And then they're also doing things right in time, right in place, what is needed, especially in the Commonwealth of Learning countries.
Yes.
He is also so humble and generous with her competences and her thoughts, and have always something good to say to everyone and to encourage people to work further on.
Yeah, absolutely. Two very good choices. Deborah, it's been wonderful talking with you. You are indeed a leader and legend of online learning. You work incredibly hard to improve the way in which online education is practiced internationally. So, Deborah, thank you very much for being a leader and legend of online learning.
Thank you so much.
You can learn more about Deborah and her work from our website.
That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.